Topics you care about by people you trust. This is The Clear Perspective, your healthcare cybersecurity, compliance, and privacy podcast. And now for the show.
Thanks, everyone, for joining today's Clear Perspective podcast. We're going to be talking about managing cybersecurity for legacy medical devices. I'm your host today, Kim Singletary. I'm VP of Solution Marketing. And with me, we have...
Hi, I'm John Benedict. I'm Director of Consulting Services for Hospitals and Health Systems at Clearwater.
Thanks, John, for joining me. There was a fairly new publication that came out. So let's talk about this publication. It's the Next Steps Towards Managing Legacy Medical Device Cybersecurity. And it was a paper that was commissioned by the FDA and delivered by MITRE. So one of the things in glancing through this, I want to understand what conditions creates a medical device to be deemed legacy. Because I was really surprised that in some cases, medical devices purchased even today can already meet the definition of a legacy device as described in this paper. Can you share some light on that?
Sure. And yes, that's a problem that that hospitals have is buying devices new off the shelf that are already considered legacy. So really, the way that I understand the MITRE guidance is that a legacy medical device is anything that cannot be reasonably protected against cyber threats. And these devices can include products that are, you know, using materials, operating systems, firmware that are beyond their end of support or end of life. And they just might not be designed to cope with the current cyber risks. You know, as the threat landscape evolves by the day, by the hour, you see devices that come out off the shelf that don't meet that. And the reason is there's a long design cycle. There's a long approval cycle. So from the time you come up with an idea for a medical device and you design it and you build it and you get it through FDA clearance, that is anywhere from, you know, 12, 18 months to 3, 4, 5 years. And so that's why that problem happens. By the time they hit the market, you could theoretically be 2 or 3, 4 operating systems down the road. And that's exactly what happens and why that has become such a problem today.
And I think there's been some newer publications, but the concept of securing medical devices, I mean, it was only in 2020 when the publication of the Principle and Practices of Medical Device Cybersecurity, N60, where it proposed this foundational cybersecurity principle and the best practices for the total product lifecycle, or TPLC, in medical devices. So today, that's only a few years ago. And so today, we've, like you're saying, we've got devices out there that have not been developed to this TPLC framework. Do we have clients, or have you engaged with clients that are kind of struggling with this? There's all this new focus on the security of these devices, but literally it's pretty nascent in terms of, you know, what they are given as recommendations and how they should implement them in their environments.
Sure. And this is a real common problem with a lot of our customers that do have medical devices deployed. You know, they're kind of living in an environment where, for lack of a better term, it's buyer beware. Because what happens is as soon as they buy the device and they put it on their network, they're responsible for it. And, you know, the new omnibus bill has gone a long way to help with this. And it has a lot more requirements for manufacturers that have to provide a pathway to support devices for their usable life. But, you know, when you think about a medical device compared to a typical IT endpoint, you know, we get new phones every year. We get new computers every 2 or 3 years. They're on a refresh cycle. The average medical device stays in service for 10 years, 15 years, even longer on some of the really expensive pieces. So when you start thinking about how you secure those, you know, what you really have to start looking at is a shared risk management framework where cybersecurity is the shared responsibility between the stakeholders and most notably between the manufacturers and the healthcare providers. In this case, the understanding of the pre-market capabilities and the post-market environment are just critical in terms of collaboration between those manufacturers and the healthcare providers.
So this paper, when it comes out, and we'll have additional information to follow up on, but what was the one thing that you really want to emphasize that you agree with this paper or may not agree with that shed some more light on the problem in this market?
You know, as I read through the N60 report, their emphasis that I love the most, because it's something I preach all the time in post-market environment, is the need for that collaboration and that shared risk management approach between the manufacturers, the providers, as well as any third-party vendors throughout the entire life cycle, from pre-market design, as we talked about with the omnibus bill, where manufacturers are responsible for designing security in for the usable life, for having a plan to support it in the post-market environment. They're responsible to share SBOMs or software bill of materials. And so that has changed a lot. But then there's also the whole post-market environment that you need to look at monitoring and vulnerability management, and then how to responsibly handle these devices through end of life. And what I see as an emphasis, as a common theme that I just love, is this collaborative approach. Because let's face it, cybersecurity doesn't matter if you're talking medical devices or if you're talking servers. It doesn't matter. It's a team sport. What's happening to one person or one entity is probably likely to happen to another, especially within cohorts like medical devices. So having that communication, having that plan, having, you know, all of that documented, so nobody's assuming, hey, our vendor has patch management, or the vendor thinking that, well, you bought it, it's on your network, it's your responsibility. Having that plan clearly drawn up, putting it into your contract language, and executing those playbooks, you know, to me, that's the most important emphasis I would make that comes out of all of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it does mean that there will be more resources needed to help put in this co-management that you talk about, the shared responsibility. And I'm really struck in this paper, there's this whole workforce development section where across this industry, and especially in healthcare, whether it's, you know, you're a provider, doctor, nurse, down to IT and, you know, the biomedical engineers, there's a shortage of skills. And for smaller healthcare delivery organizations, rural and critical care, you know, some of this recommendation is really not feasibly an option. They just don't have resources to do that. Yet, when the medical devices become unavailable, diversion is even more costly in their revenue loss, but more importantly, absolutely patient care. So with that in mind, I mean, you're talking about collaboration, what really practical steps would you recommend to these organizations that are on this, you know, resource constraint issue in helping to manage their devices?
Sure. You know, that's a great point. And that's also probably part B of what I like out of this N60 paper the most, is talking about resources, because it's a challenge, especially with medical devices. You know, everybody today, resource constraint, we have to do more with less. We just have to. It's just the fact of what we have to do in today's world. But what we're finding across all of our customers, regardless of their size, is that especially with those smaller organizations and rural providers, having to work with really small teams. So that means people have to wear multiple hats. And in wearing multiple hats, it becomes very difficult to find resources, to find people that understand IT security, network infrastructure, and medical device technology. And so what we see happens is that need quickly becomes two or three or more FTEs instead of one. And so, you know, one of the things that I would say is using third parties or fractional resourcing is what I would call it. But, you know, kind of like a VC. So if you can't afford, if you're in a situation where you can't bring in a full-time CISO with their salary and benefits and everything, in this case, even more so, bringing in third parties that have that expertise on the bench and they can give it to you at a fraction of the cost of one headcount. That's what we've seen as one of the most cost-effective ways to attack this. Because as you said, you know, when you go on diversion, if your Mac Lab cardio lab is down and you only have one, you can't take in stroke patients, you can't take in cardiac patients. And that, in terms of lost revenue, can be thousands of dollars per hour. So it's hard to not justify bringing in the headcount to address it. But the simple fact is, it's usually two or three instead of one. So how do you justify hiring three people for what might happen? And then you just get into this whole thing. So my biggest recommendation would be find those third parties. It's obviously something we can help with at Clearwater, but we have that expertise and we can bring them in when they're needed, and you don't have to pay for them full time every day.
You know, and part of that responsibility of people who would do that, whether it's a third party like you mentioned, fractional, and I'm just kind of getting your feedback on here, is that total life cycle protection of the medical devices is patching. It's one of those things, like it is an operating system at some point in time. It's been digitized. It has some sort of connections for the most part. Have you seen in like the last few years that the need for patching has escalated? So it's really kind of hindered this aspect of people who are managing these devices to keep up with all of it.
It has, you know, and so building out that whole program that addresses all the risks throughout the life cycle is important. And that patching part, one could argue that, well, forget patching and let's just do segmentation and let's do other compensating controls. And I've seen how that's worked out for some organizations, and it doesn't play out well, especially if they have an incident. So you can't just ignore patching. And so then you get into, well, has the manufacturer approved it? Have they tested it? Have they validated it? And then you get, you know, hospitals that just don't have the resources to install a patch on one device and test it and make sure that it works. So you have to go through that whole validation process with the manufacturer until they give you the thumbs up that it's safe to put on. But yes, it's absolutely essential to do that, because some of these devices don't do well when you start trying to segment them and using other compensating controls. I mean, that's the whole thing here, is legacy. And so if you think about how hospital networks have grown over time, we spent 15 years trying to achieve interoperability. And then once we achieved connecting everything together, we realized, oh boy, now we have a different problem. Everything's now connected, and now we need to segment it. And now we need to patch it. And now we need to insulate it. So 100%, there's a need for patching it. And where I'd really point to understanding the challenges of biomed providers, whether you do it in-house or you have a third party, I would make sure that collaboration and partnership is really strong there. So is a device that's still being vendor managed, meaning it's under its warranty period, make sure that you understand what patches are out there and are available, and you're pushing to have them installed in a timely manner. If it's a critical patch, make sure you've got SLAs built into your contract so they're happening quickly. And make sure that you're not just assuming that somebody else has it, because they don't. Unless you see that happening, unless you see it in the playbook, unless you see it in the SLAs of your contract, don't assume that it's happening.
It's a good summary of probably why this paper came out, is to give some better guidance about all of that. And I agree also that it's really great that I saw how to build the team, both from the healthcare provider and from the manufacturer and from your internal, to learn about how to do this long term, and the development of those teams and what things are needed with them. So, John, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about the managing cybersecurity for legacy medical devices. For those out there, if you like this podcast, let us know. And I want to say thank you for listening to the Clear Perspective podcast, where we talk about all things that help healthcare become more secure, compliant, and resilient. We'll talk to you next time.